Welcome to the Law and Liberty podcast of the Calcedon Foundation. I'm your host, Andrea Schwartz. I have the pleasure of talking today with an Air Force major, Dean Hoekstra, who has been familiar with Christian Reconstruction and Rush Dooney from the time he was in college. Dean, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
So tell us a little bit how you first heard about Calcedon, Rush Dooney, and topics like theonomy and Christian Reconstruction.
Some roommates I had in college discussed things with me and gave me some books, and I was involved in an OPC church in the area and went to a number of conferences. And of course, the volume of material was pretty deep, so I had a lot of exposure over those college years.
What was it about Rush Dooney and his thesis that interested you the most?
I think his insights into biblical law, and especially seeing the cohesiveness of the biblical law, just the purpose behind it, because a lot of them are culturally distant from us or fragmented, apparently. But his writings really showed how it was there was a great unity in the will of God in the law, and I think that's one of the features that really struck me.
Now, when you were in college, did you know that you were going to make the military your career?
I did.
And have you been in active duty and active theaters of war since then?
I did 11 years plus a little active duty. I was in the special operations for the majority of that time, and I spent a little bit of time in training command, and then I've separated and have been in either a part or full-time reservist since then.
So you're actually in the reserve right now?
That is correct.
So for a lot of people, especially now with conversations about just war theory and things of that nature, what's it like to be a Christian in the military?
Yes, it's pretty unique as an American because of our heritage, the strength of that Christian foundation, but also coupled with the power and the prosperity that we have. And when we look at the history of America, we tend to see a peaceful, loving people who want to just build, but still at the same time filled with wars and wars and wars, and it's seemingly never ending. So right now, the American culture is kind of swinging back after the Vietnam period of really being messed up in our thinking and despising, for some good reasons, the wars we were in and taking it out on the troops. And now, of course, we're the other side of the spectrum, I think, especially with the church, almost a glorification of those in the military. So there certainly are competing things to think about in the military nowadays.
Has it been difficult for you sometimes to sort out how to serve God and serve in the military?
It has, and for these reasons I just mentioned, I think the church needs to do much more thinking in this area. I think it's a lot of simplistic slogans are brought to bear, but we've really drifted more than I think the church wants to realize with our culture and therefore our government and our military as applications of that culture. And so it's more complicated and it's more messy and it's not as pretty as the church would like to think.
So give me some idea of what it's like to find yourself quite a ways from home in another country and another culture and trying to be salt and light where you are.
Yes, the military is unique in some ways, one being it's total ownership. You know, you sell yourself to them, and there is a contract of certain standards of behavior, but they pretty much own you. You're completely theirs, and if you're not ready and prepared, you're going to fall victim to many influences and temptations. I know that just having a bunch of young men especially just carted off and cobbled together and protected, let's just say they're in a deployed location and they're living in a tent city and there's not much to do other than train to kill the enemy or just hang out with your buddies, there's going to be a lot of sinful things that come to the surface immediately, and you're just thrown right into that. And that's one of the obvious difficulties. What's not so obvious is perhaps some of the more professional influences or temptations that are out there that the military will expect you to do, but it might not be just quite the right thing to do.
You find that there are few Christians in the military, or do you find that there's a lot of brothers that you run into?
Oh, there's a lot of brothers. Each particular unit will have its own mix. I've been in some that are overwhelmingly Christian, and been in others that the Christians are few and far between. But even the believers aside, for the most part, you would call your average military man a decent man. That means he's basically honorable. He responds to responsibility, and he fulfills his obligations. He's dependable and hardworking, and has a certain degree of teamwork, these kind of things. So they're decent folks. But, you know, if you don't have the foundation of righteousness, decency, you know, it can only take you so far.
You know, I'm the daughter of a doctor, and my mother used to say, whatever you do, do not marry a doctor. Do you think your wife would say to your daughter or daughters, whatever you do, don't marry a military man?
Yeah, that's not been uncommon, and you have to know what you're getting into with that and with the trajectory of our culture. Incessant wars, they call the current wars the long war, and, you know, been at this business for far too long. It's well over a decade on the current battle, and fronts are opening up all over the place, so the separation is going to be there. Just even beyond that, there's a certain change to a man in a war situation, and if he gets in and out, that's one thing, but if you immerse people into a war environment and you permanently train them to kill and to face certain peoples as foes and enemies, and this just is incessant and the deployments never end, I mean, you're gonna mess with that man's mind, and he's going to change. War and battle hardened people just being separated and immersed in a crowd of military men will affect that individual, and I think that's just something that this culture needs to talk about more. For example, the suicide rate is amazingly high right now, especially in the Army, and I think it has more to do just than the deployments, but also just the mentality that these soldiers are forced into. And, you know, the support system fails when you're dealing with all the pressures of war and being separated from your normal support system. There's only so much, you know, your military family can do when you don't have all the support that God designed you to have in terms of family and community and some normalcy.
I was talking to someone who made the observation that when people go into the military, they spend quite a bit of time in basic training and training for what they're going to do. But when they leave, there's very little training on how to go from a military mindset to a civilian mindset. And he was telling me about one such person who was so used to walking around armed because that's what you did when you were in the service and you were fighting in a theater of war, that he felt almost defenseless and felt like he had to have something that he was holding on to that was protecting him. Do you experience that with people that you know who've been in the service and then have left?
Yeah, that is prominent in certain sectors of the military, perhaps more the ground troops on the front line that have maybe more your basic infantry type skills that perhaps don't have a technical skill or some other industry that can translate well to the outside. It definitely is a factor. And I mean, it's true that the transformation, they take a pedestrian off the street, put them in basic training, and they really want to crank out a killer. It's someone that's willing to go and do something to someone else that he never would have, you know, a month or two prior. The transformation does work, and when you couple that with constant war footing, and especially when they go overseas, and it's a different world. It's you and your buddies, and the enemy's real and out there, and with the kind of warfare we're doing now, akin to nation building and occupying and just driving around and trying to integrate a little bit with the population, but really being sitting ducks for booby traps and bombs and snipers and such, and the horrible injuries that all the ground troops are seeing on a fairly regular basis, that can really set you back. And I'm sure everyone's heard about the post-traumatic stress syndrome and all these cases that are just overwhelming. the system here, it's quite a quite an impact on someone's ability to function if they don't have. I mean, I don't know to the exact extent, but you just need to have a solid foundation. You need to know exactly who you are. You need to know why you're grounded. You need to know your place in this world. If you're going to go into these environments that we set up, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, and so that when you survive and overcome there and come back, if possible, better for it, not worse for it, which ultimately, you know, we're seeing that in ultimate cases.
How accurately, as a 15-year military person, does Hollywood depict military people and what it's like to be in war?
No, they're actually getting a little better in that regard. I think they, of course, got their little political correctisms they sneak in there, but I think they are going back towards trying to be accurate. So they're showing perhaps the right units, more or less, that would do this kind of mission, and trying to get the equipment right, and trying to show that it, you know, to the extent that they show that these are just really just normal people that are put in kind of an extraordinary situation and given an opportunity to excel. I think those are somewhat accurate. So it's getting a little better in that regard. You know, the people that have to go through these horrible situations, they just want to get back home. They just want to take care of the buddies and get back home.
Is it weird to have been in an environment and then come back and you're a hero and you might not feel like a hero because there were things you did and saw that, given your preferences, you that it feels awkward to be deemed a hero?
Oh, it is. It is. And most men would, whether the military or not, you know, they dream about fighting and combat. And so when someone's given the chance to actually engage in it, it's going to be a mix. He's going to be exhilarated at the same time. He's going to be sobered up pretty quick. I know for myself, just after I was in combat, and just as the days and weeks and months and even years went on, I just liked that time less and less, and just had more distaste for it. And I just wish that we would find peace and dwell in peace and not have to be on these war footings all the time. I think that's something that the church needs to deal with too. I think we're glorifying the fight and the war far too much, and we're relying upon the physical fight, which should not be our reliance.
What's it like? I know you and your wife homeschool your children. What is it like to be away for so long and then come back and try to integrate back into a family after you've been on active duty somewhere?
Yeah, that is a challenge. I know I have been blessed to have some of the shorter deployments for a lot of the men I know, but it's not uncommon now for deployments to be a year, some even longer, and that's really tough. I know that the wives and the mothers at home go through an exceptionally difficult time, especially if they have children and younger children. That's definitely an area of the church needs to make sure she's reaching out and helping in those cases to support those families. But it is tough, and I think I am thankful for all the ways of communicating nowadays, and the military at least does recognize the necessity of the family, because they're taking these men away so often that they do what they can to make sure there's means of communicating and stuff, so it lessens the blow a little bit. But there's no doubt it's difficult. I think reintegrating back in depends on the individual and the individual relationships that he has, but they're usually not too bad, I think, to get back in the flow.
I suppose homeschooling has additional benefits, that if you're transferred from one state to another, that you're not disrupting the children's schooling because it's just at a different kitchen table.
Yeah, and I've noticed that with homeschooling. It gives us a lot of flexibility that others don't have. They're tied to the government school system and their schedule and even the private school systems. So we have used that to our advantage, definitely.
What would you say to parents who are contemplating their children participating in military service as a way to get their college paid for? Is that something that you think, by and large, is a positive thing, a negative thing, or does each case have to be viewed separately?
Yeah, I think everyone needs to make their own decision. And my caution is that you need to know exactly what you're getting into, because the challenges are going to be there. It's guaranteed. And you need to make your decision before you swear that oath of how you're going to handle these challenges. They're going to come your way. They're going to ask you to kill people, and you better make sure you're able to say, yes, these people should be killed. Or maybe if you're not doing the actual killing, you're a part of a team that's putting it all together, making it happen. There's other challenges. They'll have you work on days you don't want to work. They'll take you away from your family. They're going to challenge you with the role of women in the military, which is still not done. It's still, increasing. They're going to also challenge you with orders to go on wars that were not followed the correct constitutional way, but you better go or you're going to get thrown in jail. So that there's decisions you have to make before you sign that oath of how you're going to handle those situations. So the biggest thing I want to do is caution all to make sure you really know what you're getting into and not be ignorant. At the same time, I think we do need good Christian men everywhere. We need them in all areas of society, and that includes the military. Even in Babylon, we need to have our godly men, and we need to have Christians in leadership roles as well. But it really needs to be to the extent we can do this on our terms. And so this is a big caution to anyone thinking about joining. The military is changing just as fast as our culture. In some ways, it's more conservative because the mission is so black and white. We have to go out and kill people or get killed ourselves. At the same time, it's the subsection of society that is directly controlled by the government more than any other. And so a lot of the social experiments will come down through the military first. So it's kind of a mix, but the military is really changing quickly. Political correctness is the rule of the day. It may be fine now, but in 4 or 5 years, it could be just farther down a road that, most people would be surprised.
Would you care to elaborate on the kind of thing when you say the social experiments are first tried out in the military? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, when the areas that their culture is fighting with but not ready to accept would be the public role of homosexuals and marriage and such. Previously, homosexuality was ruled incompatible with military service, and that was the law of the land, and it just was not very controversial. And then under the Clinton administration, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was as much a compromise as he could get with the military chiefs, that's about as far as he could get them to go agree to, would be, well, we're not going to bar them outright. We're just going to, if you say something, we can prove it, then we'll get you. But if you, we're not going to ask you. So they removed that from the forms when you signed up. And then things took a pause, but the current administration took it the next step and removed that restriction. Why did they do it? None of the military chiefs were asking for this, which is usually where the best change comes from an organization like the military, is, hey, we have a mission need. We need this kind of support. The military chiefs will bring that before the Congress and the president, and they'll usually respond. That those are the more effective changes that increase the ability of the military. But this was more of a political top-down from the civilian leader. So we have to obey. We're the military. We're a pretty captive audience. So I think that explains where this one came from. But this one is by no means done. They're still working through the ramifications of that. And I think now that they've put the coverage for homosexuals and homosexuality in the military, they're probably going to see a tie to a protected class, kind of like a non-discrimination class. And I know that everyone knows you can't speak against certain things of political correctness, and especially in the military. So I'm waiting to see what happens with this area, particularly with chaplains or with folks that are just having a discussion and someone in the unit doesn't like their ideas. I'm waiting for them to tie it to a non-discrimination type area and legal problems. But anyway, that's one of the examples where we're not only captive to the culture and the military here. We have to, you know, stand smart and salute to these edicts, but also it's rapidly changing. That I can counsel someone thinking about joining, but I can see this is going to be one area that the ramifications are not yet out, and it's going to be several years more of this, I think.
So my next question is probably going to sound very naive, just because you've lived through this. When you enlist and when you move up the ranks in military service, is it ever addressed that if something takes place or is mandated that goes against your conscience, are you encouraged to follow your conscience and your religious beliefs?
Oh, yes. On the books, definitely. And they will make a point of the, you know, diversity and tolerance and such. But we all know when push comes to shove, and when they have to choose one or the other, we all know which one they're going to choose. It's going to be what is identified as the politically correct morality. That's what's going to trump true righteousness. So, yes, they do. And you know, the lower level, probably just like any organization, the lower level leaders and such tend to be much more accommodating to their people and, you know, trustworthy and just a real good man. But it's, you know, typically as you go higher up, the politics takes a much higher weight and influence. And so that's where it gets much more difficult at the higher levels to allow that freedom of expression. For example, I mean, you know, if someone's not politically correct, he will not advance beyond a certain level in the military. He'll have to agree with the current paradigm.
Do you find much freedom to evangelize and share your faith, or is that something that's discouraged?
No, I think there is freedom to do that, and a lot of it is the manner in which it is done, which is really the case in anywhere you go. If someone's a jerk or overbearing or just causing problems unnecessarily, then, you know, he's going to be highlighted negatively, which that's to be expected. But no, I think that military men, generally speaking, are the kind that are kind of, you know, loud talking, opinionated, and we can handle it. People dish it out. You know, I've heard every end of the spectrum, and I think it takes a little bit much to really offend somebody. So it's a fairly open environment, as long as you may keep it on a personal level.
Your plans are to stay a career military person. Is something that you would encourage your sons to participate, or just do the same thing you just said, look at the situation when the time comes?
I'm encouraging them to have that as an option later, but we'll just have to see. You know, the culture is changing so quick, it's hard to even extrapolate 5 years from now, but just because something is difficult doesn't mean it's not worth doing. And even this, if God is calling you to do something, you need to do it, even if you have every reason to believe it's going to end in failure or a dead end or just not work out like the textbook says, because God's in charge and he's the one that works all things. And if he wants someone to start something and then just be shut out at some point beyond his control, well, I wouldn't consider that a defeat. I would consider that doing what God wants. But we just want to do it in full knowledge of what's happening when it involves righteousness.
What's the best thing about being in the military?
I think it's twofold. I think it is the service to your country, and not everything we do is actual service to the country. Some things we should not be doing as a military, but just the theory that you're out there serving. And the second is it's the camaraderie that develops. And I think this is what practically everyone I've talked to that's been in and they've separated, that's the one thing they say they really miss, is just the camaraderie. It's kind of the good side. I mentioned earlier that in the military, you're like a slave. I mean, you're completely owned. They own you, and they own you to the point where they can legally say, if under the right circumstances, you go and die over there. And, you know, you have to obey up to the point of your life. So the other side of that is akin to a family, and everyone has a special bond and a commitment to each other, and the amount of help and ministry and sacrifice that I've received from others in my unit has seen others receive. It's really been humbling and amazing to see. So that is one of the good aspects of the military.
Well, thank you. I knew I wouldn't have a hard time finding things to talk about. just before we go, is there some aspect of the preparation that you received prior to joining up, whether it was through a Christian upbringing, additionally, as you said, the influence that Dr. Rushdoony's writings had, what would you say prepared you for your service and the calling that you're now living out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was raised in a believing family, and so the context of my work, and especially what I saw as my calling to the armed forces, was serving God, and that means serving others. And that was my big picture of how I fit everything into it. And so I didn't go in just thinking it was just a job or a career or something like that, but I was involved in a greater undertaking that involved helping others. On the second side of that, theological training I had received, part through Rush Dooney's books, Chalcedon's materials, and training at church and reading the scriptures, I understood the place of the military, of organized official killing and combat, and having that framework allowed me to get immersed in it and to return from it without being messed up or anything, but just knowing the context of what I was doing. So I think those two things were very helpful.
That's good, because that would give parents or just young men the blueprint on, okay, if I feel that God is calling me to do this, this is the kind of preparation that I need.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely, if they think that's in their future, to see what God's law says concerning these areas and to have a good understanding. And then you'll be able to spot where we fulfill that, and you can just put your hand at the plow and go forward. And also those areas where we deviate from God's law, you'll be able to have discernment and hopefully some wisdom of how to handle that.
Good advice. Well, thank you, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in for this edition of the Law and Liberty Podcast. I think after listening to what Dean has said, it's probably a good idea to get a hold of the Institutes of Biblical Law and Rush Dooney's Systematic Theology to go through the various areas of how the commandments line up with day in and day out living, and having a systematic theology in order to approach the various things that we've talked about today. Thanks again, Dean.
Thanks, Cynthia.